Tape number 400, side two. It's August the 3rd, 1979. I promised last April, way back in April, it seems yesterday, that I would try to put a few important dates together, interweaving dates that I consider influential in affecting our history today and tomorrow, based upon the meetings and the persons that were combining their energy or their mutual hate and conniving for assassinations or cover-up or altering the state of history today. And I've been working the last 3 weeks very hard to put together this chronological order for you, and I'm going to be taking a break during the month of August, the last 3 weeks in August. So I decided to work this past 3 weeks on these tapes and give them to you in chronological order with important dates, and beginning briefly in 1826, and then they're 3-hour tapes that will go up through the end of 1948, up to 1948. I was hoping to encompass a lot of situations in this time period, but that's all I could do in the job that I wanted to be done. And then later, if you like those tapes, I'll continue with them. So there will be a cutoff on the news of the days, the daily updates, and I will give that chronological order of some important events, which I've been promising for a long time. I've gotten a lot of letters and calls about that, and those will be the 3 tapes in August. I do have one problem. My tape cassette here, I had at the shop to be fixed today. I had some problems with making a tape, and there's an echo to it and a sound which I didn't like, and they were working on it, and I hope that those tapes that I left off at the tape center, to me, they sounded okay. They may have a little echo, or there's a slight hiss there, and I have to leave the machine in while I'm taking this break and get it completely overhauled, but I have no other cassette machine to work with, so I apologize if they're not as clear as I would want them to be. And I hope that you like that chronology. It took lots and lots of work. I've been working on my book all summer and working intensely with that, and it's hard to get my mind off of it, but I did promise you, and I thought that this would be the best opportunity. So those 3 tapes in August will be a chronological background and an example of that kind of information that I would put in the time slot is what I want to share with you on the back of this tape now. It has to do with an article that was in the Associated Press Wire Service this week on education, and also from the Village Voice this last January, 1979. About a college testing service. And the lead article today in the papers out here, or this week rather, was "New Law Puts a Rip in the Veil of College Testing Service." Now, this is a very revolutionary kind of act or behavior that happened after World War II, when the testing of admissions to all kinds of trades and entrance examinations and small high school children and lower than that, the elementary school children were put to massive intelligence tests. And all of a sudden, the minorities, the Puerto Ricans, the blacks, the Chicanos, American Indians, I suppose, particularly the blacks, became aware that these tests are discriminating, that the quality of the tests or the questions about certain Latin characters or Greek characters had nothing to do with law or medicine or Mozart or the mathematical equations that you couldn't possibly use in law school entrance examinations. And Governor Hugh Carey in New York City just this month passed what he called the Truth in Testing Act, the Truth in Testing Law. And that law says now that the test makers must explain how the exams were devised and what, exactly what, they were designed to measure. If you wrote a law based upon black culture or black language or Puerto Rican or Chicano family legends or stories, the whites couldn't pass those tests. So the testing industry up till now has been made of a very small clique of government officials, persons from the CIA, since 1948, testing came in really big, and this is the first stab at an institution called Educational Testing Service that was set up in 1948, and this would be one of those important institutions to go into that chronological time slot that I'm devoting for this study for you, because this kind of a meeting place changes the whole cultural history of the entire United States. The country clubs, the yacht harbors, the nightclubs, the sororities, the lawyers, the doctors, because if you can screen out through examinations a certain element of society by giving them these tests that are geared towards the prep school, the college preparatory schools for the middle class or upper middle class families, the others really don't stand a chance. And this particular institution for college test, it's called College Testing Service, is in Princeton University. There's a private area that is in secrecy. The computers are in secrecy. They're shared with the CIA. And it's classified like government secrets. It's higher than government secrets because it determines who gets government jobs. And you can go on and on to the effects of these tests. And now they're being challenged because the minorities have said that there's prejudice in favor of white middle-class families. Sharpest reaction to Governor Kerry's new law comes from 125 medical schools and dental schools, whose enrollment is mostly white in just in New York alone. Now, this isn't in the 49 other states. This is just in New York, and they already have said the test administrators for the Association of American Medical Colleges and the American Dental Association said that they would stop giving admission examinations in New York rather than comply with the law, rather than show what the questions are and how they've been geared or rigged all these years. They would just rather not give examinations and make their decision on some other basis. Now, in South Africa, you have apartheid to separate the races, and in the South, we had busing and various ways of discrimination and signs. But it's very simple. If you have tests to keep these people out, they don't mingle with white students, they don't marry, there's less chance of their marrying the white students, the daughters or the sons, the interracial marriages. You keep them out of neighborhoods. The neighborhoods are very carefully separated. Just, I live in a residential section in Carmel. Carmel is almost totally white because the blacks can't afford to live here. Why can't they afford to live here? They can't be insurance salesmen. They can't be engineers. They can't be in aerospace or in military programs except at a certain very low level, and they're excluded from housing and clubs and recreation, transportation, and all the other opportunities. If you can screen them at their law degree, their insurance salesman degree, even beauticians, or whatever the occupation, you can stop that social mobility, because education is a passport to social mobility, and social mobility ensures some kind of a desegregation, because if people can earn the money, they would then have the right to move next to you and attend the affairs that you go to and do the things that you do. And if you had blacks, 50% of the blacks or a proportion of them in the medical schools and law schools that should be there, then the white society would break down at the Metropolitan Opera and the Mara Museums and all the so-called cultural events. Everything has been lily-cling white. Even the rock concerts, the majority of them are white participants. And these, the effect of keeping the minorities at a low level can be done through the Educational Testing Service. A listener from New York who subscribes to the tapes sent me the article from the Village Voice. It's dated January the 15th, 1979. The article is called "Testing is the Name, Power is the Game." And it talks about that Maximum Security Conference, which is similar to Camp David, located as a part of Princeton University right near it in New Jersey. And there was a meeting there last year called The Future of the World, no less than The Future of the World, with people like Henry Kissinger and Mr. Brzezinski and General Alexander Haig, David Rockefeller, Frank Kerry, board chairman of IBM, and various prime ministers. And there they discuss, such as they do at the Bohemian Grove later in the year, they just got through a meeting up here in California, but that's mostly for fun. Here at Princeton, they were discussing the future of the world, but the hosts were the Educational Testing Service. It started after World War II in 1945-46 when Project Paperclip brought people to the United States. They just didn't bring rocket scientists. They brought professors to Princeton and Harvard and Yale and Stanford Research and UCLA Medical School and so forth, various doctors and scientists that worked for Adolf Hitler. And they were brought to this country, and the National Security Council was formed in 1947, and that changed the entire face of this country, the presidency and the Congress, and you'll hear about that on my tape on the chronologies. And then after the National Security Council came, how do we keep them, the masses, out of our schools, our corporations, our educational testing service? So this was set up by three parties, one the College Entrance Examination Board, the other the American Council on Education, and the Carnegie Foundation. And they began to administer scholastic aptitude tests, and also these are given for every graduate school. If you want to be a teacher or a chemist or a physicist or whatever, these aptitude tests are geared towards certain people in our society. And as the article said in the Village Voice, it built up an Orwellian empire with over 300 different kind of testing programs. The money comes in to this educational testing service from corporations, from various professions, from various private schools. About $80 million a year comes in. They described in the article in the Village Voice that the student is a captive consumer. He goes to grammar school and high school, and even in those schools, elementary school and high school, they get a minimum competency exam. They are tested. In fact, there's children at the high school here at Carmel now who don't have to go to high school the last year. If they just take a test on their IQ or so forth, they can skip the last year and get their degree. But if they're in school, attending regularly, they're given the high school minimum competency test every year. And the first 2 weeks of school, or in this short time period afterwards, every child is photographed. And when you go to talk about classes or schedules, they pull out their photograph side by side for every year of the whole class and their test. This educational testing service handles 50 vocational licensing tests and administers 300 different kinds of programs. So the minute a student is born in elementary school and goes there or to high school, he gets these examinations. And if he wants to go to a college that's worth anything outside of the local junior college, which is low in faculty capability, that is actually an enlarged kindergarten, the ones that I've seen, they stay there. I don't know how much testing they do there, but if you want to go on to another college, there's more tests. And then the graduate school is the hard part. The nurses, the teachers, and the professions, all the professions get tested, and they're tested in college also. But the graduate school is the big lump from an everyday job, 9-to-5 job, to the professions. Anybody who wants to earn money in our society and make that mobility goes to graduate school. This article says that it is a threat because of the links of the Educational Testing Service to the CIA. And you know the CIA is not supposed to be working domestically, ha-ha, but it's in every facet of our society. And their own entrance exams are devised at Princeton University, and the CIA has access to the computers of the Educational Testing Service. So I wonder if they want to spot somebody or get a hold on them of what they're doing or what they want to do, they can just bunch a computer and pull in a name and get the background on that person's family, how they vote, what they think, and put it alongside their scores. I wonder if they're sophisticated enough to combine the computers there with the computers in Salt Lake City and Utah of our genealogies and police records from the Los Angeles Police Department and applications for abortions or marijuana, all fed into the data banks in Utah. I don't know how sophisticated these are, but you can believe if they're going into the corporations or into halls of learning, they're carefully screened. Maybe that's why there is no resistance, no outward intelligence about current problems. The newspaper describes students as apathetic and indifferent. They've probably screened off the people who were active in political science classes, who were inquisitive and taken a certain kind of person who's just a grind and wants to get through and get on to his profession, and they've screened them out, and what they got is what we're seeing, and that's why there's so little activity on the campuses today. Between the 43,000 chemicals that are in your food and water and in the air, and goodness knows what else, and the red dye that diminishes your memory and makes you hyperactive, and the preponderance of red dye substance in children's school programs, you really have a problem of distinguishing where the highest minds are and who would make the good doctors or lawyers, or really feed new ideas into corporations instead of these dead old tired ideas, and the country's going bankrupt. They're screening out for a certain kind of person, and it's like when the genes were cousins just intermarried with other cousins, they ended up as idiots. The intermarriage or intermingling of similar ideas, just like similar genes, produces very little. The cover of Newsweek this week has a picture of Teddy Roosevelt, and it asks, where are our heroes? People that made an effort are put down and derided, like John Kennedy and Robert Kennedy, or fixed up with women so that they're discredited for the main contributions they made. And there's other heroes or heroines of the era that should be noted, but they're put down, and there's nobody leading people or watching them. And what you're getting is a carefully screened group of homogeneous sponges who listen to the teacher, give back what the teacher says, and that pleases the corporate structure because there's no conflict of ideas or possible sabotage at that level. So that there's information in these computers, they say 15 million Americans, but it has to be more. And also foreign students, if they have financial or personal history reports, they report it with Educational Testing Service. This article says that they also have many friends in Washington, such as Juanita Krebs, who is an official on the board of Educational Testing Service, a John Bradamus from Indiana, a congressman, who was chairman of the House Subcommittee on Select Education and was on the board of Educational Testing Service. And they talk about Wilson Riles from California, who's now being named as a possible head of the Department of Education. He's voted 13-12 in favor of testing at a time where the controversial Bakke decision was coming out about whether to give special consideration to blacks or minorities to enroll in medical school. The answer was, don't give them favoritism. I heard Lena Horne, and I guess there's people like Wilson Riles and others that believe, don't give them favoritism, let them pass the test like anybody else. And yet the test is rigged from them right from the beginning. So that is a catch-22. Justice Lewis Powell could refer to the Bakke decision when the subject came up before the Supreme Court on whether to allow him into the medical school over against a black person that was going to get that seat, and he challenged it. The Educational Testing Service gives tests for college boards for more than 2,000 colleges, and as I say, you can believe it's the better colleges and not the little small junior colleges around where people get a moderate training in hotel management or motel distribution of frozen foods and so forth. The level of intelligence and the escalation up the social scale is so nil if you just have that kind of an education that they don't have to bother. But if they carry 2,000 colleges, you can believe that they're the cream around the country and in every state. I think the best analysis that Ralph Nader gave of the educational testing system, I put on the sheet for you just a little bit of it. There wasn't room for the whole thing. And Ralph Nader is no baby in the corporate structure of things. He said, in quotes, the Educational Testing Service, that's the company specifically, that was formed in 1948 by Carnegie Foundation and the other educational testing services. This specific one in Princeton, he said, is the thickest net of corporate secrecy in America. Now, that's pretty thick because he knows the corporate secrecy. He said they're deliberately secret. If you are networked to these boards and admission people, you control the professions and occupations of millions of Americans. After studying General Motors, DuPont, and Citibank, they are child play compared to the Educational Testing Service. Well, as I say, this is really a social revolution of a kind if this ever breaks through, because when he says you control the professions of and occupations of millions, when you control the professions, then you control the mobility, whether you have black airplane pilots or black people at the airports other than carrying language, how many black people are signing you in at the airport or taking the tickets or working in executive branches at any of the airlines. And if you go to Rockwell or Boeing or Hughes Aircraft and many of the army bases and the aerospace industry, the blacks, for the most part, are into the janitorial work, and that's where they're relegated. So when you change the test by which intelligent people who have an opportunity to move up are stymied, because the tests are written by the Central Intelligence Agency and people like associated with Henry Kissinger and Mr. Haig and Brzezinski, then you know that those tests have to be to control these lily-white schools, and that's what we see, and that's what we're getting, and I'm glad that this expose came out. One, I'm glad the governor, Hugh Carey, was able to pass the law about the test, and I hope it catches on around the country. In Illinois, there has been a multi-million-dollar lawsuit, a class action suit, against the educational testing service by black insurance agents. You know how few black accountants there are and black insurance agents, and they claim that the multi-state licensing exam discriminates against them and that they were forced to redesign the certification test. Thousands of people were hurt by these tests, goodness knows how many, so they filed a class action suit against the way the tests are formed. They reflect the disadvantages minorities have. This is the Village Voice saying it. The standardized tests have virtually no relationship to the school or the professional performance. We're losing a lot of good professional people and getting very mediocre people with no distinction. The medical field, the legal field is just nil. It's run by a sterile bunch of people. I can tell you myself, when I go looking for a doctor or a lawyer or socialize with doctors and lawyers and know the idiot classification, if they weren't white and didn't go to prep schools, they never would have gotten their education. Most of them are absolute idiots. So the law school admissions test would be done away with, and the test for medical school would be open to see what the questions were, all of these tests. What was the purpose of the question? What did it serve and show about the person? Now, that in its own way is one of the first challenges I've seen to the power structure in a long time, and I spent a lot of time with it because it's very subtle. But in a world where we keep pointing out everything that's bad, it's good to say there's a chink in their armor. It's in New York with Governor Carey, and whatever state you're in, maybe you might want to write to your congressman or assemblyman and see if there could be this same opening of the examinations for people to read what they failed at, how they failed, who passed them, and what kind of questions were given, and make them explain why those questions were directed in the way they were. In case you haven't gathered by the tone of my tapes and you're just taking a few for the first time, I have an intense hatred of Henry Kissinger. I believe that bringing him to this country, even at age 15, and putting him in Army intelligence was similar to Hitler's youth or the Hitler werewolves. I believe that person is a Nazi. I don't believe he has the interests of the United States. He has loused up Southeast Asia. The terrible Holocaust in Hong Kong and Cambodia is his legacy. In fact, there's a book out about that now. And another person that was brought over this country, the father of the hydrogen bomb, Edward Teller, gets such prominence in the news for everything they say or do. And every time I see them, I just want to puke. I think they're war criminals, and I wish they were hung up by their heels like Mussolini was. And I wish that somebody would catch on to how they contaminate this country and bring it down on its knees. Last week, Henry Kissinger was in the news. He's in the news almost every week. A big picture of him in Congress saying, we need higher defense spending, that the SALT II should be tied to the U.S. defense. This country is so embroiled in war debts from World War I and II and Korea and Vietnam, and he wants us to keep buying weapons. We have enough overkill, 10 times over or more, and doomsday bombs, you name it, and we're not going to use these weapons any more than the French used the Maginot Line. The French were making arrangements for this great wall that would protect him from the Germans during the Second War, and yet all the French officials were working with Adolf Hitler and making arrangements for the coup that would overthrow France and become Nazi in 24 hours. The wall didn't make a bit of difference, whoever built it or spent it. And here's Kissinger keeps saying, we should spend more money for weapons. We don't need it. I don't believe the Russians would escalate if we didn't. But it takes a German like Kissinger to keep hammering away on the weapons. Edward Teller, the father of the H-bomb, is in the news. He said, we're blasting away at the nuclear plants, and the critics are using scare tactics. He said, Ralph Nader and Jane Fonda used propaganda to frighten people. This country needs nuclear energy for survival. And then in Dallas, Texas, a company called Dresser Industries ran a full-page ad, a journal on how to avoid war. And Teller goes on to say the damage was contained at Three Mile Island. The father of the hydrogen bomb should be put on a cage for display and parade around the country with the freak shows during the summer. People like Ralph Nader and Jane Fonda try and try to turn people on. They're not perfect, but they're trying to use their intelligence, in spite of the fact that they may have passed a few tests, they didn't come out, to make some changes to keep the world healthy or not polluted or wait until you know the answers. There's no place to destroy all this waste, the chemicals I talked about on the other side of this tape. And at Teller, it takes pock shots at them. Our priorities are way overboard, and when they say in Newsweek, who are your heroes? I think, and I have very few heroes, but I respect Nader and Fonda, or even Joan Baez, at the limit she does it to the best that she can to try and stop the killings over there. I won't take issues either way on this particular subject. People are dying, and other people who caused those deaths are looking the other way while these boats are consuming them in these monsoons. Teller tells us that these people are giving us scare tactics, and yet an inquiry into Three Mile Island was called off by a group of people that were going to work with Jimmy Carter. They couldn't get access to the documents. The commission won't give them the information. And one group had to dissolve because they were refused the information from the Nuclear Regulation Committee. And this week they were assailed. The builders of the reactors there were scolded for the way they designed the crippled reactors. The Babcock and Wilcox people were taken on the carpet for that. And also it came out that they could have avoided the possible contamination, and they had no plans for evacuation, and they should have taken the pregnant women away. Remember when the sheep died in Utah at the Dugway Proving Grounds, and they said there's no relationship to the atomic testing, and people were dying of cancer and goiters and all kinds of infirmities, and now they say, yes, it was the result of the testing. We have yet to see what's going to happen at Three Mile Island. But why is it that people like Teller and Kissinger and Haig are out there rooting for these things when they're not really having the interest of America behind them? Mr. Brzezinski and Kissinger and Haig do not. I challenge them to prove that they care at all about this country any more than Rex Tugwell did in designing a constitution the way it was set up in 1970, or the fact that Warren Burger wants a trial without a jury, because it doesn't always work to have an adversary. Well, it doesn't always work in Nazi Germany to have a monkey court either. It works better. Even in the Dan White case, it works better to be lenient than to roll people off and cut off their head or give them to firing squads in no time at all. And I think that our society has so turned around its priorities that it doesn't even know what it wants. When it reads about these chemicals, we're stymied. We don't know what to do. They're saving them for rioting. They were saving them in 1975. They intend to keep them 10 years from now. This is 1979, so they'll have them up through 1989. They intend to keep those chemicals and the symptoms I gave you. You can suffer. Your children can suffer from them or the cancers in the air. There's no solutions, but a lot of big mouths telling us we need the weapons and we need the nuclear agencies and we need to go on escalating the munitions and the ammunitions game. It just makes me sick to read the paper and see Kissinger's face in quotations all the time. There was a plane crash on the Monterey Peninsula last week, about a mile from Paul Anka's home. A Democrat from New Mexico, a member of the New Mexico Senate, a doctor, a physician, and his wife. It's hard to know what happened to the plane, and I doubt if we'll ever know. The report on the plane crash is expected due in 3 months. That's our local paper, and there's no information about this particular doctor or anything about the condition of the plane. I just assume that that state senator can be chalked up for missing, and maybe years from now, somebody who knows something may come forward, and they may not. But that happened here in our area just July 27th, 1979. Our time is out again. I'll be back with you next week. This is Mae Brussel in Carmel, California. Keep well, and we'll be back next week.
See how everything's changing, and see how time is rearranging.